Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Good evening, everyone. Yes, as they say, let's get started. So tonight we have a special guest with us, Miss Kat Ward. Kat is the host and producer of the popular show Paranormal Heart. She can also be heard on KPNL Radio, and she is currently doing voiceover work for a paranormal book series called The Obsidian Guardians. So, without further ado, we better get started because this is a big one tonight. And again, let us all welcome Miss Kat Ward.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Well, hello, Kat, and welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, no problem. Kat, usually when I start out my segments, I like to talk with people about their humble beginnings, because this also establishes the foundation for where you are today and how you managed to get through some hurdles yourself in life, especially if you've dealt with the paranormal. And I thought this would be a really good place to start. So,
sure. Well, first of all, I am in the Ottawa Valley in Ontario, Canada, and I was born and raised in New Brunswick on the East Coast. And one of my first memories was from the ages of about 5 to about 13, we lived into this a three-story apartment building. We lived on the top floor, and it was a really old building. And I remember dealing or witnessing the Hat Man, but he was 4 feet tall. He was a short one. And I can get into a little bit more about that afterwards, but I just want to say that's my first memory. And then fast forward to almost 10 years ago when we moved to the Ottawa Valley, I joined a team here called Canadian Supernatural Research Society, which is CSRS for short, because it's quite a mouthful. And we started investigating in the Ottawa Valley here. And then I started doing podcasting, and here we are.
Oh, wow. I want to go back to the Hat Man here. Okay, so how old were you when you had this experience with that dark shadow figure?
Between the ages of about 5 and 13, that's when we lived in that three-story apartment building. It was a really old building, and it was a creepy building. We lived on the top floor, no elevators, just stairs. Uh-huh. And the building was so old that before we moved in, I don't remember when they converted it to electric heat, but it used to be heated by coal. There was a coal furnace in the basement. So that's a really, really old building. Have no idea when they first built it, but it was really old. It's no longer standing. But my room was at the opposite end of the apartment building compared to where my parents' room was. And we had really big rooms. There's a two-bedroom apartment, you know, huge, huge rooms. And I had a big walk-in closet. And to this day, my father still says he remembers when I was that age talking about the man in the closet, the man in the closet. I used to have, I don't remember how frequent he used to show up in my room. But I remember it was from the time we moved into the apartment building till we moved out. I never saw him again. But he was about 4 feet tall, because I remember that, because I am comparing him to the height of the dresser that I had at the time. Mm-hmm. And I used to always yell for my parents, you know, bloody murder, you know, it's like the man in the closet. So, of course, my parents would come running, mm-hmm. and they would look under my bed, check the closet, and they say nothing's here. But I used to see him quite often. He never used to take notice of me, thank God. But every time I saw him, I remember I would take those covers and I'd have them just below my eyes. And I was just like, don't move, because I don't want him to see me. He hasn't paid attention to me. I don't want him to. Mm-hmm. It was terrifying as a child. Later on, I can't remember. A few years ago, I was listening to, actually, I'll get to that part in a minute. Back into the apartment building, because of the big walk-in closet that we had, my father tried to tell me, nothing's here. So he'd take me into the closet and he'd say, you know, big walk-in closet. And he says, kid, there's nothing here at nighttime that's not here in the daytime. Mm-hmm. I looked at him with big eyes. I still remember this. I'm like, you mean he's here in the daytime too? Mm-hmm. And then he could just hear his mind going, oh, that kind of backfired. He's trying to console me to let me know that, you know, whatever's here at night is here during the daytime. But it kind of backfired on him. Mm-hmm. I was terrified of my closet for the longest time. Mm-hmm. Then we moved, never had that experience again with him. I always wondered, what was he? Why was he there? You know, I never heard of anybody talk about anything like that before. So the Hat Man was always in the back of my mind growing up, you know, as an adult and everything. Mm-hmm. And I remember listening to another podcast and they had a guest on there talking about the Hat Man. And I thought, oh my, and he described it, but he was a tall one. He wasn't the short one. Mm-hmm. So I messaged the podcasters, the hosts, and said, hey, you know, love your show. I also had an experience with the Hat Man, but he was a short version, not the tall version that you speak of. And that was the first time I'd ever heard of the Hat Man. Mm-hmm. Didn't know you had a name before. I just used to call it the man in my closet. Mm-hmm. So this guy sent me, his name's Justin Cancellari. He sent me a link to the YouTube video that he said, you need to watch this. This gentleman had the same encounter growing up, and he decided he's going to do a reenactment of what he saw as a child. And I thought, oh, okay. So he reenacted, turned the lights out, and for a split second, all those memories and emotions from my childhood came flooding back, because I thought it was exactly what I remembered as a child. And it was the 4 foot one too. That was the first time I ever heard anybody else talk about the short one, as well, you know, because after hearing the show, it was the tall one, and that's what everybody talks about. You don't hear the short one very often. So that's been really, really fascinating to me, because I don't know why. Is there a difference between the two? I don't know.
Let me jump in here and ask a couple questions to break this down just a little bit.
Yeah.
So, okay. So this happened in Canada, right? Where you live? Mm-hmm. Was it New Brunswick?
Yes.
Area.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't usually hear, although I could be wrong, of many places, even back in the day, although you're in an older building, having extreme, not extremely, but real large closets. A lot of people back in the day, especially if it's an older building, although I don't know exactly quite where you might have lived in the district or the subdivision or whatnot or anything, you know, usually they have these wardrobes, or usually they have such a small closet. And you, in this day and age, you would sit there and wonder about, my God, where would I put all my clothes? You know, that's kind of what I say, living in a very large house, you know, there is no room in there for space. But so you have this big, this thing called a closet. Was it anything else other than a closet that you know of back in its day?
No, it was just my bedroom. And then that one, it was a walk-in closet, and I remember my father had built shelves at the back part of it, because mm-hmm. we use it as storage as well. Mm-hmm. So along the back of the closet, there were shelves for storage. on the right-hand side of the wall, they had where I could hang my clothes. And on the left side, he'd built me a little area that I could play, a little play area, keep my dolls and everything. But no, it was just a walk-in closet that I know of.
And then the next question I would have is, did you say this was a, and I correct me if I'm wrong, was this a rental or was this an actual house?
It's a rental.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, it was a three, it was an apartment building. It was three stories. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And did you say you're on the top, middle, or bottom floor?
Top floor.
Yep. And the district, again, that you lived in, do you know anything about the history of what went on in the district of which that house was built in?
No. I was from the Moncton area in a town called Dieppe. Anybody who knows anything about the Maritimes, there's a great big Champlain Mall that's built in Dieppe, you know. Mm-hmm. The Moncton Airport is actually in Dieppe. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I've been wanting to go back home. I went back home last summer, but I've been wanting to do some research, but I haven't had an opportunity yet. But I do know that the individual that lived in the apartment building before us was actually a bootlegger. And for the longest time after we moved in, we used to get knocks on the door in the middle of the night, people wanting to buy their booze. And then my parents had to say, he doesn't live here anymore. I think they called him Whitey was his name. But yeah, it was a bootlegger.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder how tall he was. And I wonder if he passed away.
Exactly.
And then I wonder if he was kind of attached to that building. And then I kind of wonder, but then the hat, now the next thing, of course, would be the hat. When people have experiences with the hat man, some of them have, they describe the hat like a typical tall hat kind of thing, not like a flat hat or anything like that. Would you say that this dark hat that you saw was more of that taller hat kind of form?
No, it was like I think they refer to it as a bolero hat or something like that. You know, it's that brimmed hat, that brim that goes all the way around, but it wasn't a
top hat though, huh?
No.
That's interesting. That would be kind of my first hat man experience that had something different than, you know, what I'm used to seeing on Hat Man. Okay, that's very interesting. Yeah, if you ever get back there, I would definitely try to nose around and see if you can come up with something on that. But again, this thing wasn't harmful to you. Did you say it just kind of, I can't remember, did it just come into your room and then just stand there, or?
He'd just kind of walk around looking for something. And he didn't. I didn't notice any features, because some people from the Hat Man say that they had red glowing eyes. They could see the mouth with fangs or whatever.
Oh.
There was no features. It was just black.
Interesting. And
I'm kind of thankful now that I hear about other encounters with these shadow people that I wasn't able to see any facial features, because I don't think I would have. That would have been even more terrifying.
Yeah, my next door neighbor had a. Something come through the wall, dark figured, not necessarily a hat man, but red glowing eyes. And her 9-10-year-old daughter was, of course, the recipient of this image and was describing it as coming very close to her face and then backing up really quickly and all that. And it just scared the living tar out of her. But to this day, I mean, I think she's only had a couple experiences with that, but outside to this day, I have no idea if that's anything demonic or anything of a different form from a different dimension. It's really hard to say sometimes if these forms take on their own look or if they can take on different forms and shape shift into something else that they think that they're blending into the environment, but in reality, they're not, because the dark, when I hear of dark, I hear darker than black, right? And yep. Black is dark.
Yep.
But to be darker than black, that really tells you a little bit about that. Very interesting. Kind of scary.
Yeah.
But you haven't had anything or any incidents with anything like that since, huh?
No, not since we left the building. And I've tried to do a little bit of research online, but I can't really find anything. I would really like to go back home mm-hmm. and go to the local library and dig up some information on what used to be there, newspaper clippings, you know, yeah. anything happened at that apartment building. Mm-hmm. You know, ask around some people that I still know from back home if their family ever spoke about anything happening in that building.
Yeah. So now let's move this into, let's say, your childhood regarding, I'm always curious about when a person truly awakens to the fact that they have either a gift, I wouldn't call it a gift, a different, an ability to do something or the ability to whatever. And I'm thinking like in my day and age, when I was younger, I didn't really think I had anything. I just thought I was causing everything. But at what point in your younger years did you start to realize that you might be having some gifts or some unusual abilities?
I don't really remember how old I was. I just remember being young. My mother was I was born French Roman Catholic in the Maritimes. My mother was very, very religious. She would read from the Bible every day. You know, we used to go to church every weekend. Then she got ill later on in life and couldn't go to church, but she would read from the Bible every day. She'd have her prayer beads, you know. My father didn't believe in the paranormal, but my mother did. She used to be able to communicate with her grandfather. They wouldn't even have to be in the same house. When he passed away, he went to her and to say that he passed away, and she went to wake up her parents, and she said, you know, grandfather came and woke me up to, you know, he passed on. And they're like, you're just dreaming, go back to bed, he's not here, he's in the hospital. They get a phone call shortly after to say he passed away. Mm-hmm. But they used to be able to communicate telepathically. Wow. And so growing up, whenever I used to see things like that or sense them, my father would kind of dismiss them because he didn't believe in them. But my mother, she didn't make me feel like I was weird. Yeah. Other kids, of course, did, because I would talk about them with other kids. And then I realized not all other children are seeing this too. So I just kind of stopped talking about it. And I was, for the longest time, I was known as the weird kid who liked ghosts, you know. I'm still the weird kid who likes ghosts, but, you know, I've embraced my weirdness long ago and I don't care.
Yeah. Well, you but know, no, I don't. Back in our day, and I don't know what our age difference is, but that was something we never really talked about when I was growing up either. But once in a while, it would kind of slip out as kind of a joke or kind of like something like that. But now people take it a little bit more seriously because there's so much yep. of it out there. So what age were you feeling a little bit ridiculed at? What age were you?
Oh, probably grade school. Mm-hmm. Just early on. I just turned 55 in May, so I'm not sure how old you are.
60.
Oh, I thought you were younger.
Oh, thank you. It must be all the late nights doing these talk shows. Anyway.
We're not too far off.
We're not too far off, but our everything that we would have gone through back then, it didn't matter if you're in Canada or New Brunswick, no. and I was way in Minnesota or even wherever. It just seemed like everybody mm-hmm. followed the natural path of how we thought and what we were exposed to at the time. So it didn't really, yep. it didn't matter. It just seemed to still be a universal thought, right?
Yep.
And when I was in, I would say that when I was in a 10th or 11th grade, there the time that I started to get intrigued, and I don't know if, I want you to think back to 10th and 11th grade here. This is when a story was actually written up in our school newspaper about a couple teachers that were very well respected and how they were trying to figure out through this ghost in their house what was going on. And yes, they wrote this whole thing up in our school newspaper. And that was kind of like the beginning for me to say, okay, so if they can talk about it, if I have an experience, I should be able to talk about it too. And they have a very interesting story about the ghost that was in their house and they played with the Ouija board. Now, I'm going to ask you that question. Back in that day, were you familiar at all that these Ouija boards were out?
Yes, even from a young age. And my mother always told me, do not bring one home. Do not use one. Mm-hmm. Did I listen? No.
that's not fun to listen, you know?
No.
Did you actually bring one home or buy one, or did you actually play with one?
I bought one and I played with one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tell us.
I got rid of it.
Yeah. No, tell us. When you first started, were you by yourself or did you have friends sit around?
I had friends.
Oh, you had a friend. Okay. Yeah. And so you would sit and attempt to play with this Ouija board. Okay. Can you tell us what happened?
Yeah. I do remember I was in my late teens, early 20s, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, somewhere along that age group. Mm-hmm. I actually brought my Ouija board. There was a bunch of friends of mine and I. We went to a friend's house. Now, she lived in a really old house. I think it was probably a Victorian house. There's lots of old houses in the Moncton area in New Brunswick. And she was, I think she was renting a room. Mm-hmm. Or she lived there. Anyways, so we all thought this is going to be fun. We'll get a bunch of us around the table, play with the Ouija board. Mm-hmm. Now, this one particular instant is what always sticks into my mind. I've played with it a few times, but this one instant is really ingrained in my mind. Mm-hmm. So my friend's boyfriend did not believe in anything paranormal. He thought we were all out to lunch. Mm-hmm. So he sat off to the side. He wasn't part of the circle. He's drinking Tim Hortons. Up here is really famous, really well known. He was drinking a Tim Hortons coffee. Yeah. He's just sitting there and he's mocking the board.
Oh,
he's mocking spirits. He's just mocking. Mm-hmm. And we kept telling him, you shouldn't be doing that. So I don't remember what the questions we were asking, but I do remember all of a sudden he spits his coffee and says, somebody put something in my coffee. What did you like to make the taste go bad? I don't remember what the taste was that he said it was. He just said it was really bad. And we looked at him and said, what are you talking? You've been holding your coffee the entire times in your hand off to the side of the table. None of us put anything in your coffee. He started being a believer. That's when he started wondering, maybe there is something to this paranormal stuff after all. So
let me jump in quick and then I'll jump back out because I want to continue with your story. But I want to add to your story. mm-hmm. So the teachers that were trying to figure out this ghost in their house that were playing with a Ouija board, okay, it spelled out things like it gave them an address of a young girl who was dying in New York, and they actually contacted the place, and they did get a confirmation back and said that, yes, we had a daughter dying, you know, and she passed away.
Amazing.
Now, another thing that happened that same night was that they had wanted some popcorn, and the Ouija board spelled out, I want butter. Okay. Put butter on the popcorn.
That's amazing.
And so the gal got up and went to the kitchen and made some popcorn, but they didn't have any butter. And so what happened was she brought the popcorn back, and the board yelled at them saying, I told you I wanted butter, damn it, right? Okay, that's interesting because that was my first thought that of manipulation by a ghost, right? And mm-hmm. then my other little story is about my sister and I who went to a magic theater about a year or two ago in Las Vegas, and they had popcorns made. And so we all got ourselves a little bag of it. And she was complaining about how she had pepper in her popcorn. And I said, they're not going to put pepper in your popcorn here. I'm sure they know what the difference is between salt and pepper. She goes, no, this is just terrible. It tastes like there's pepper in my popcorn. And there was a hat man, by the way, that was in the corner of this small theater room where they're doing this magic stuff. And I did shoot back there with my camera, and I did capture a very obvious legitimate orb that was sitting in the chair that one kid that was the kid of the magician said, there's this black entity that was actually sitting right next to me in this chair. And he wasn't kidding, because I actually caught something there. But now let's go back to did he ever describe your friend in the coffee, just whatever the hideous taste was? Or did he really believe that that something was got in there that shouldn't have been there?
I do remember him describing what the flavor was, but I don't remember what the description was. It was so long ago. And he really believed that somebody put something in his coffee, and we're like, come on, like, there's no way.
Yeah, that's what I find interesting, the manipulation or whatever by, I don't think my sister, though, was mocking anything at the time. I think she was a little nervous when the magician act was about to start and stuff like that. We were in a kind of a dark room, you know, it's in a bad part of town, very, very haunted part of town and everything. But I found, I mean, I should have asked her to give me a few of her kernels of popcorn so I could have debated it with her. But I did not, because of COVID and everything that was going on. We're pretty much to ourselves. Very interesting, though. That's interesting. Okay, now tell me. All right, so you're playing with this Ouija board now. Did you conjure anything out of, okay, that was probably something. Were you playing in Tim Hortons with your Ouija board?
No, it was a friend's where she was staying. She was renting her room there. Yeah, it was one of the old Victorian houses that she was living in.
Yeah. And did you conjure anything up?
I really don't remember at that point, but I do recall another time that we used the board. Now, after we moved out of the apartment building, we bought one of my mom's from a large family, 13 kids in the family. So one of her brothers had a house and he sold it to us. So we moved out of the apartment building into that house. So after we'd been living in it for a couple of years, because there was an old attic, and you could tell there were the A-framed.
Yeah.
But you could tell when you go up the stairs, you can either go left to one bedroom, to the right to another bedroom. There. Large enough or straight for a storage area. And I remember my parents wanted to lower the ceiling. So Dad and I were doing a lot of construction ourselves. So we were ripping gyprock and everything. And we realized behind the gyprock, there was a fire in the house. So we finished the renovations anyway. So we're doing the Ouija board with the friends. And I sorry kept coming up. I sorry. Come to find out, it was a little girl. She lived in the house.
Apparently, from
what we were able to communicate via the Ouija board, was she was playing with matches upstairs, started a fire, and she perished. And she kept saying, I sorry. And she kept saying things like, my father, who's also my mother. I determined that it was just her and her father. Now, I don't know if the mother perished as well. I don't know. But I don't recall her name. But the name at the time, I wrote it down, did some research at the library. Somebody during that time frame, it was about 80 years prior to when we lived in it. There was a house fire. And there were, well, obviously, because we did the renovations and we saw the proof there. But the names of the people that we were able to get from the Ouija board actually lived in there, in that house. And I kick myself for not doing this, but back in the day, you didn't do this. No. I wanted to contact the gentleman to say, your daughter was sorry. She's still here and she's sorry. She was still in the house, you know, because we used to have two cats, and one cat would sleep in the hall, and all of a sudden she would wake up screaming and hissing, and you know, you know how they raise their back, the fur is all, and she'd be looking at a spot, and my mom is like, oh, my mom would jokingly say, yeah, it must be the ghost. I feel it was the little girl, because afterwards, when we were communicating with the girl on the Ouija board, and I said, it's all right now, you can cross over. At that point, I knew that much to say that to her, and the cat stopped reacting in the house after that. So, yeah, so I think the girl was still in the house, the cat saw it, and it was, I was really excited when that happened. Because that was my first real, other than my friend with the coffee, that was my first real connection with something on the other side. And it was fascinating.
You know, I'm just thinking about a interview I gave a couple years back, and this gal showed a picture, or no, a video. She actually showed a video of Kat, when you, I hope that you'll watch this video as everybody else watching us at this time. When you see the introduction that I have just prior to, and it's going to say your house or mine, you're going to see this thing that looks kind of like a skeletal monster. And it's amazing because this gal that they interviewed me, and she showed this video and they wanted to get my impression of it. And anyway, if you look at that picture, just before we go into the, to me giving an introduction about you and about the show, that is exactly how it looked when it was grabbing the door frame and it came around. And when it turned back, it had like an eyeball that showed or whatever. But the long story of this is there was a cat in the room at the time. And the cat was watching towards the door frame. And as the thing was coming around and it was grabbing onto the door frame, just kind of like a withery ghost would, literally. And then when it brought its head around and stuff and it saw the cat, it decided that it was going to retreat, because a lot of these ghosts do not like to be in the presence of a cat. Yep. Okay. And so as it was retreating, when it turned its head, you could actually see an eyeball. Yeah, it's creepy, but it looks just like that picture I have just before we go into our segment tonight. So take a good look at that. But I want to bring up your cat. Your cat, and cats are supposed to be, they're very, very sensitive, just like animals are and dogs are too. But particularly ghosts do not all of them, especially those that are more demonic or those that are more negative, they don't like to be in the presence of a cat. It doesn't matter if it's black. It doesn't matter if it's a tabby or anything like that. They more or less will retreat. The cat will react because it wants to have its territory and it doesn't like anything bothering its territory. So my question to you, back to you regarding your cat, do you think whatever it was, even if it was a little ghost girl coming up to the cat, keep in mind, there's one more thing you also have to keep in mind here, that animals do not discriminate about looks. It doesn't matter how ugly the thing is at all. It doesn't matter. It only cares about its territory. So when that little girl or whoever it might have been would have caused the reaction from your cat that stood up, you know, and does the cat thing and hissing and all that, what do you think was going on there?
It would only happen when the cat's name was Cleo, and she was actually a black cat, and we had a white cat as well. Mm-hmm. But Cleo, it would always happen when she was asleep. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking the little girl would approach the cat and would scare the bejesus out of the cat, because it was, and she was in a deep sleep, right?
Right.
And just kind of like, what the heck, you know?
Right.
I think that's what was happening. The girl wanted to approach the cat, and the cat, coming out of a deep sleep, got scared.
Yeah. Yeah, but then also wanted to protect its territory, because that was its territory. Interesting, yep. You brought up black cat. Although it doesn't matter per se with cats, black cats in particular, anything more of a negative nature or demonic or whatever, they do not like. There's something about a black cat. So I remember telling the hosts of that show, because one of his girlfriend wanted a cat, I said, well, I guess you have a reason now, and I guess you better make it black, you know? So, yeah. Interesting, though, about that. You know, and the Isari, that statement in and of itself, that's kind of very, that sounds like something a little kid would say, a very young kid, especially if they're playing with something and they realized what happened. But very, very interesting. How long did you stay in that house now once you started reconstructing it or whatever? At that time, do you remember how long you stayed there for?
I stayed there until I moved out. I was in my late 20s. Mm. Moved in when I was about 13. Stayed until I was about my mid 20s.
Okay.
And when I was in about 28, I got married, moved away, but my dad my parents stayed in the house. Then my mom passed away when my youngest, who's 19 now, he was 9 months at the time. Okay. My mom passed away and dad stayed in the house for 2 more years after that. And the house is no longer there anymore. So when I did go home last summer, mm-hmm. the kids, my oldest, she's 21. She kind of remembers the house and my Mimi. She used to call my mother Mimi.
Yeah.
It's now a road. So we'll be I had to go for a drive where the house was.
Yeah.
And we're driving. I'm like, we're going through the kitchen. Now we're going through the living room.
Here's my bedroom, right? Straight up. Yeah. You know, it's so sad when our past is removed, you know, or starts to become removed from us and it's non-existent, because sometimes it's just nice to go down memory lane a little bit, and when it gets erased like that, there's no concept of anything at some point, only a memory that you could write about or maybe draw about quickly. And did you have any other experiences in that house other than that one with that potentially that little girl?
I could sense something in the house, something separate than her, but it stayed away. It kept its distance. It was just kind of like lurking in the shadows, for lack of a better term, you know? So, but I didn't feel like it was very friendly.
Yeah.
So, and I always wondered if the cats kept it away, because I've always had cats.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always had a black cat. We have three cats right now. One of them's black, but I've always had a black cat. Just because I believe, like the ancient Egyptians, that cats have a paw in the afterlife and a paw in this, you know, they mm-hmm. see both worlds. Yeah. And I think that's why spirits or any entity or some of them don't want to go near the cats, because they see them for what they really are.
Yeah. Well, especially the black ones, and especially the negative entities, at least from my understanding. I tried to do a little research on that for that show that evening, mm-hmm. Just to talk a little bit more about why things occurred and why that thing, whatever it was, that grabbed onto the door frame and was kind of peering around, pretty ugly. But what amazes me more is the fact that I found a picture that just like it, which is on my show. So everybody take a look at that picture and just know that things like that actually do exist. So now let's move this into going into your older years. At some point you're getting intrigued now, or you're becoming more interested in the paranormal. What was one of your first points of entry into your investigating or belonging to a group or anything like that?
Well, my husband and I used to watch every Friday night after the kids would go to bed, we used to watch Most Haunted, bottle of wine, mm-hmm. plate of shrimp as a snack, you know, yeah. and we'd watch Most Haunted. Yeah. Always fascinated me. And then that was back in New Brunswick. And then we moved to the Ottawa Valley and made some friends. And a friend of mine, they all knew I was into the paranormal. A friend of mine messaged me one time on Facebook and said, hey, there's this lady looking to start up a paranormal team. And I know that's right up your alley. I thought you'd be interested. Her name's Katie Turner. So I messaged her and said, hey, I've heard that you're looking to start up a team. I'm very interested. Told her, I said, I'm sensitive. I don't consider myself psychic. I'm more sensitive, because it's not like something that's there all the time. Well, I guess it kind of is. But anyways, so I said, you know, I do have some gifts. Just interested in joining the team. So we were having a meet and greet at one of the local Tim Horton coffee shops here, to meet everybody. And, my husband's like, you're really going to go and meet these people? I'm like, yeah. He goes, what if they're a bunch of wing nuts? And I'm like, well, then I'll say thank you very much for the coffee. Enjoy your investigating. Take care, you know? And I jokingly say now that, they were a bunch of wing nuts, but I joined them anyways.
And I liked
a bunch
it.
Of people. And we had one of our first investigations was in a place called Deep River, which is about 20 minutes away from where I live now. And one of the team members actually knew, she worked in the hospital and she knew this gentleman. He was in 94 at the time, I think. Mm-hmm. And was having paranormal activity in his home. So that was our first investigation, and we actually got something. I was excited. This is my first time out, right?
Yeah.
And it was amazing. Like it was so fascinating, and I was giddy. Like, you mm-hmm. know, yes, we got some knocks, we got responses on the EMF detector, you know, and all that, but I wasn't afraid. I was more, it's like a kid in a candy shop.
Yeah. And are you still there?
Oh yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, we're both sitting here for a moment thinking about candy. I'm just sitting here going, I ate all this candy all day today. So if I look like I'm having a candy eye, so here we are, completely quiet. And I'm like dreaming of candy again. Yeah. Anyway,
what candy are you thinking of?
Yeah.
If it's the same thing. No, really. I have one particular candy I'm thinking of. What are you thinking of?
Well, no, it's more like, what did I eat? The candy that I ate today, which, by the way, I have this big sugar high on right now, is I ate literally strawberry Twizzlers, the licorice.
Yummy. Yep.
It's a sin. It's a sin because I just couldn't stop eating it. But I know for a moment we're like going, candy. Anyway, yeah. So, okay. Now, yeah. Back to our story, everybody. Yeah. That was a nice commercial break. So the question I have now is, bring us. So I know when I first started and had my very first paranormal experience that I could at least say legitimately, it does give you a head, like a rush. And then all of a sudden, if it really thrills you, then you want more. And that's the whole thing. That's the problem, is when you want more. Because the thing is, as you build on it and build on it and build on it. So now you've got your little rush in. Okay. Now what? Now what's going on?
We just tried to find more investigations in the area. And we live in a military community here. And we've done some, they're called PMQs here. I can't remember what it stands for. It's military housing anyway, but we've done other residences. We've done businesses. It's with COVID, it put a kibosh on things. Yeah. So in the past 2 years, we've hardly done anything really. I might have gotten us an investigation at a local museum.
Good.
So I'm really excited over that. The team's excited, you know. Anytime we get to go out, because, you know, we're hungry for it now.
I know.
We want to know. At first, we investigated because we wanted to prove that there was something there. Mm-hmm. And now we know with personal experiences and everything that there is something there. But now it's not that we want to prove it now. We just want to communicate and find out, okay, why are all these experiences being encountered throughout the world?
Yeah. Yeah, I was telling Kat a little bit about this unusual situation that I've had over 100 plus paranormal experiences and 11 books out now. But this one might make the book if I ever do book number 12. So I was telling Kat about a couple weeks ago, I was taking one of my medication pills. And you know how you aim for your mouth and you miss it, you know, kind of thing. Well, I aimed for my mouth and I missed. Yeah, I missed it and it went flying somewhere. And then you can't find it. And you're like, well, I've got more here. So maybe someday I'll find my pill. Now, it's a nice light lavender pill. Okay, it's for my thyroid. And so anyway, I just said someday I'll find this pill. All right. So keep in mind that my house seems to be with something. I don't know what it is. I don't know who it is. I don't know if there's more than one, but it was just a few days ago, because I'm out on the road, but a few days ago when I went to my, I threw my pajamas on top of my bed, and the bed cover it's kind of like a real raspberry color. Now keep in mind that a really light pill like purple lavender would show up really well against a raspberry coverlet. And so I threw my pajamas on the bed, and keep in mind that for about a good week or so, I was flipping the cover back and flipping it back and flipping it back and flipping it back. So if there would have been anything on it, it would have been well flying in the air or somewhere. It wouldn't have been there. So I go to pick up my pajamas, and there's my purple little purple pill sitting right underneath them on top of the raspberry coverlet. And I said, this is impossible. I have been in and out of this bed for the last week plus, flipping the cover, flipping it back, flipping, and there was nothing on there. And then all of a sudden, right under my underneath my pajamas, I just had my pajamas on and I had just thrown them off. And then because I was taking a shower, threw them and I was going to put them back on because I didn't need to go anywhere just yet. So, you know, there's things that just cannot be explained in this world. And you cannot tell me that pill sat there for over a week and a half undisturbed with the way I recklessly go at jumping in bed and stuff. And then all of a sudden, right under my PJs, there they are. Have you ever had, Kat, something so unusual that has happened to you that you have to had, you had kind of scratched your head twice and go, I don't understand what just happened here, but something just happened here?
Oh, yeah. Now, I don't know if you do this, but I do this a lot. Mm-hmm. If there's something I can't find and I'm scratching my head and I'm going crazy because I know I said it right there, like keys, for example.
Yeah.
I swear I put the keys there. I'll actually go, okay, this isn't funny anymore. Ha ha. Mm-hmm. You've had your laugh. Now put it back.
Yeah.
Sure enough, I'll turn around and it's there. It's just amazing. Like, how does this happen?
Yeah.
Do we really not see the item because we're not really paying attention because we're fixated on trying to find it? Or was it really not there? And then whoever took it actually put it back, you know? Of course, I believe the latter, but.
My husband's cousin always had this favorite perfume bottle that she put in her purse. And her deceased sister, mm-hmm. which I had her on the show many moons ago. It's somewhere in my podcasting, you know, repertoire here. But her deceased sister liked to play jokes on her all the time, many jokes on her all the time. And her deceased sister liked her perfume bottle. And so there was a day she went into her purse to try to get, you know, get her perfume bottle, and it wasn't in there. And it was the same type of thing. She had said, you know what, the joke's over. You can go ahead and put it back. And probably a day or two later, it went back. Now, most people would say, did somebody else take the perfume bottle out of her purse? And mm-hmm. she would stand up to you to this day and say, nobody goes into my purse, period. Did it fall to the bottom of your purse? Mm-hmm. Did you accidentally, you know, push it to the side and you just weren't grabbing onto it and couldn't find it? No, it wasn't there. It's called, what is that called? Aporting. Aporting something is like basically taking something in midair. Oh, remember I was telling about the magician's place that we were at with the popcorn and the pepper? Okay, so the kid, who is the son of the magician, did say to us, me, my sister, we were chatting, you know, he said there are times when he had a ring right on his hand and it would literally just in seconds disappear. And he said one time he found his ring up where the ceiling light was. And it was in kind of its, it was a place up there where you could actually just kind of set it, you know, up where the ceiling light is, one of those that kind of hang down. And he said, if you can tell me how my ring got up there, I'm all ears. But he did bring up the fact that sometimes he has things just taken right off his hand. Isn't that weird?
That is weird. I've said countless times on my show that the thing that fascinates me the most about the paranormal, no matter where you are in the world, doesn't matter what religion they are, what culture, whatever, everybody has paranormal experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, what he did is he also started keeping a notebook on all the things that were happening during the show that wasn't, that were never written into the show to begin with. And I just sit back and I go, God, I would love to see your notebook to see, you know, if I could remember when something happened or whatever.
He needs to publish that.
Yeah. We're like, we're like clapping our hands going, wonderful, perfect, beautiful. And they're going, how the heck did that happen? Do you have a lot of tall trees and forests around where you live, or is it more?
Oh, yeah.
You do? Okay. Do you have any reports at all about Bigfoot or Sasquatch or anything? You know, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, or even Dogman. What kind of reports do you hear?
I remember as a child, I remember hearing about Lugaru, which in the States is also called Rugaru, which is pretty much werewolf, Dogman. But yeah, I haven't heard too many accounts of the Dogman, but Bigfoot, all across Canada, even in a place called Algonquin Park, not too far from, it's a huge park, provincial park here in Ontario. I think the park is about an hour and a half away from us from one of the entrances anyways. And there have been sightings in there, and there's actually a location that the team and I, we like to go to called Buck Hill. It's it used to be a old logging community. And there was this one legend, the Buck Hill legend, back in the early 20th century. I'll just be quick here. Early 20th century, a logger, there was a big snowstorm, told his family to stay. He had a wife and a daughter and a dog, told him to stay in the house, in the cabin, because he had to go get some firewood. Well, when he left, apparently the dog bolted out and the little girl went looking for the dog. So when the father came back, the wife is frantic. She's like, the dog bolted, the girl went after the dog. So he took his lantern, and because he knew the storm was going to get worse, and he went to try and find her. Couldn't find her. He went out every night. So there's a legend now that if you go and you park your car, because there's just trees on both sides. There's no power lines, no street lights, no houses. It's black. So a lot of teenagers like to go there, and paranormal investigators, of course. And the legend is that if you park your car up the hill looking down, and you flash your lights three times and say daddy, 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 you're going to see a green glow of a lantern walking across the street and going up the hill. We like to go there a lot, and we were there one time, and we all have our various devices, and it's quiet. If you could, if anybody was walking in the woods, you would hear it, because it's just, there's nothing. All of a sudden, we heard this loud crash, scared the bejesus out of us. We instinctively grouped back to back and looked around, you know, and I jokingly said, maybe it's Bigfoot, we should go look. You know.
God, no.
No. But the thing is, an afterthought, the beginning of our investigation, we had little stones being thrown at us.
Right.
And then we hear this loud crash. And now that you think of it, it's like, I bet it was probably Bigfoot, because there are, because the Buck Hill is not too far from Algonquin Park as well. And there have been sightings over the years. And although I've never heard of any in the Buck Hill area, I think Katie has, and some of the other team members have, but I definitely think that it was not somebody in the woods trying to scare us, because we would have heard them. It's just this loud, I can't even describe to you how loud it was, and it just scared the crap out of us all. And then it was dead silent.
When it's really, really super loud, I don't think I've ever heard of a report yet from someone who has had either a near encounter or kind of a direct encounter where the sound wasn't obnoxiously loud or just this pulsating, sound that just goes right through your
body. The infrasound.
Right. The infrasound. Yep. Yeah. And it's kind of like, and the rock throwing, of course, it's interesting. They all seem to have the same habit, is to throw little rocks or throw rocks at somebody. It's very fascinating if you think about it. Yeah, I had rocks thrown at me, and someone else, I had rocks thrown at me too. It's kind of like you step into the mentality of these, what they're thinking. Oh, throw rocks. But it's when they can pull a tree out of the ground by its roots and flip it upside down and stab it back into the ground really hard with the thing upside down. Now that's probably a little bit too much for me, right? But you didn't see anything, but you felt and heard it. And how far away did this happen from you? Feet away, 100 feet away, 50?
I'm not really sure. The woods, like you have this road, and then the woods are there.
Yeah.
You might have maybe 5 feet, if yeah. that, of just of yeah. just a little bit of grass, you know, right. and then it's trees.
Right.
And I don't know how far in the forest this actually happened, yeah. but it was loud.
Yeah.
And we were, when you're looking for ghosts, and yeah. back then we weren't really into the Bigfoot thing. No. We were just there investigating ghosts,
right.
spirits. We're there to look at the legend of Buck Hill. So we didn't even think that there could possibly be a Bigfoot there. Right. So after the fact, we started thinking pebbles, little yeah. stones, you know, yeah. and you would see them go across the road. And it was just like, what the heck? You know, yeah. you would think you would hear somebody walking in the woods.
Yeah.
Because you have lots of little branches and leaves and, you know, whatnot. But I really have to look back into my, because I always wear a voice recorder around my neck when I investigate.
Yeah.
And I'll have to go back and listen to that footage again, just to hear what our reactions were.
Well, I've been hearing about big, I always call them big feet, you know, Bigfoot, trying to make yeah. its way down. It seems to be coming down towards, I'm in a big city. Okay. And so, someone that I talked with up in northern Minnesota, but not way up near Canada, not near up during the border, going down a little bit more, had just reported something very similar and gut wrenching. And I thought, that's interesting. They're making their way down further than what I would gather, where they'd be more up towards the border. And so how far from the border was this? Did you call it a park? That you went park, to when yeah. you heard this?
We're outside of the park.
Yeah.
Probably another, I don't know, 40 minutes or so away from the park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out how they would get over the border. Because you know that they have somehow they have that all fenced off or something. Well, if it's a Bigfoot, they probably just jump, you know, I mean. Yeah. Or if they're magical in any way, they probably just walk right through it. You know, there seems to be a lot of different reports and a lot of different Sasquatches, Bigfeet. I always still call them Bigfeet, you know, Bigfoot, you know, yeah. All kinds of names. And depending on what territory you're in will determine the size, the shape and the height of some of these things, which is very fascinating. Did you say that the red ones are more nasty? Is that what you said?
No, I'm just saying it depends on the location. Color can be a factor as well, because we've heard of black, brown, red, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I heard the red ones in particular. I don't know. I don't know what a Yeti looks like, but I think if they are red in color, if a Yeti is red in color. And again, I don't follow the Bigfoot phenomenon as closely as I should. Probably because I haven't had an experience with it yet. And then when I do, I probably will follow it a lot. But, and I hope to never have an experience. I knew somebody who I talked with. I'm not sure if I had her on an interview. I just talked with her generally. She got lost. Her tires were flat. She had to walk. She was in the woods, da-da-da-da. She laid down for a while. There's also cougars out in the woods, yada, yada. She woke up. She smelled something pretty wretched. She thought it was a cougar. She gets up. She tries very hard to try to scare the thing. And then what happened as a result of that was that when she looked up, it was like a 8-9 foot Bigfoot. So, yeah. And the thing got, when she went, it went, and then it turned and it ran off into the forest. So it didn't touch her at all, but she was literally 1 to 2 inches from this thing. And it smelled like, it's just, when you hear these stories, it's hard to imagine because I heard there's some blonde ones too. And this is the other thing. Yeah, I know. It's just really, really interesting. So, well, I think we have done ourselves some justice here tonight. And I think this is very interesting. Love your stories. Love it. But I want you to tell everybody a little bit about how they can get a hold of you, how they can be on your show, and give us some of these thoughts so I can get them in the show notes at the end of the show.
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, the name of the show is Paranormal Heart Podcast. Mm-hmm. If you want to chat or if you want to be on the show, send me an email at paranormalheart13@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just to say, hey, you can find the show on YouTube and Podbean. Those are my main two platforms, but they're also on Apple, they're KPNL, digital radio, pretty much wherever you can find podcasts.
Well, thank you, Kat, for being on the show today.
Thank you so much.
And again, I always say this to everybody. I'll say this to you too. It's when I don't say it, you should worry. Okay. But in the late future, we'll have you back again and see what's happening in your neck of the woods, as they say, and what's happening in ours. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you a lot.